first, let's recap what we have done so far. Well, this is just something I'm going to use again and again later. This is called a Cauchy contour integral formula. It's some harvest we've got out of our complex plane. And there is this interesting notation as d bar, as h bar is defined to be d over 2 pi I. But this 1 over 2 pi show up everywhere. And if you do this definition, you can never worry about it to 1 over 2 pi. Okay, so let's say what we learned so far. We have accomplished a lot. We find this local infinite algebra, which our whole goal today is to promote it. And we found that there is a subset. Let's write n. So this is nm belongs minus infinity to infinity of just really infinite tower of generators. And they have this algebra. And then we realize if you restrict yourself to 0 and plus minus 1, taking account of the bars and the non-barred ones, then you have 6 left. They nicely form in this L2z divided by the 2c divided by z2 algebra. You have this global transformation, Möbius transformation, I believe. Okay, then we say let's introduce the VIP players in town, which is our primary field. And you see I cheated by all these dots. Well, there's always anti-holomorphic there, but let's try to save time since I only have an hour. And then we say these things are really powerful. You just say, I have two random primary fields. I wonder what's the correlation function. Is the correlation function defined? Nope. I just know it's some function shouldn't change and the conformal symmetry. By that knowledge alone, we already know it should behave like this. First, they have to have the same conformal definition. And then the power of z minus w has to go like this. And there is some constant, and it doesn't matter. And then we also calculate the three-point correlation function. So hopefully, by far, you have either read the lecture notes or read the tutorial solution, or at least look at the tutorial and it says that it's also completely determined in the denominator with some structure constant on top, which is actually the important thing because that defines our CFT. And at the end, not the least, also in yesterday's tutorial and I also mentioned in class, sometimes you make a wish and it becomes true. It's like you pick up a genie bottle. And then we say that there's Chiral field and this Chiral field, you know, energy momentum tensor has only two components left and one is Chiral, only depends on Z. And the other one only depends on Z bar. And that's why I'm free to also sort of hide all this anti-holomorphic away. Since today we are going to do something with the energy momentum tensor, we can only look at a half and knows that if I add the bars correctly and then the other half just falls. And then if you have a look at the tutorial, also the tutorial realize that there is one particular question is crucial for today, is that we realize this conformal mapping can take us from a plane to a cylinder to a complex plane minus a dot, because the cylinder is a ball punched two holes and the plane is the ball punched one hole. So there is we're going left with a hole in the middle. But if you went through the little tiny questions there, it is trying to say that I have time, constant time slices like this, and they get mapped onto constant radius. So if I'm evolving in time, it's like evolving outward in radius. So this motivates the radial quantization by Dirac already. So then the infinite path gets to mapped in the middle of the complex plane in the origin. And okay, I promise that I'll give you some motivation in the tutorial about the cylinder thing. The simplest one line explanation is consider a closed string, it moves in space-time, you get a cylinder. And a slightly longer version of the motivation is that if we look at our favorite loop integrals, which I'm sure you have looked a lot if you were in the QED renormalization class, and then we realize this integral probably divided by some other k to some power, coming from propagators. And then you realize this thing really go horribly if you take a d in the large n limit, so d equals 4 is pretty large, then you have UV divergence, possibly. If you take an even larger dimension, then your UV divergence become worse and worse. But if you take a d to be very small, such as 2, then with a couple propagators, we'll have IR divergence. And one way to cure IR, well, string theorists claim that they solve the UV divergence problem of quantum gravity by putting everything two-dimensional. And they claim, oh, we can also solve the IR divergence. If we just compactify the circle, then we restrict the momentum. We have a momentum cutoff because of the cylinder, the quantization. Okay, so that's all what we learned so far. And let me just mention one thing. We're going to have an ordering issue. As we learned in QFT2, that if you put a correlation function and use the path integral formalization, then the operators are automatically time ordered. And that's also one of your QFT2 interview questions. And that one, you can actually try to understand as what Feynman said, that intuitively, if you want to move from one point to the other point, the path integral says, well, let's insert some screen in the middle, and you have to go to this screen, find all the paths to reach this screen and reach the other screen, and then you just discretize your space and insert many, many screens. And if you use that formalism, you have to reach the first screen and then reach the second screen, so it's automatically time ordered if you're doing a path integral. Okay. But what we just said, and what you saw in the tutorial, is the constant time slices has been mapped to the constant radius. So over here, we would just, okay, we haven't got an action yet, but we thought if we have an action and have done the path integral, it will insist that we should radial order our operators as well. Okay, so now we reach lecture 3. But our whole goal today, there's one goal today, is that we'll get this Virasoro algebra. Okay, let me say that the Virasoro algebra shouldn't really be our Virasoro. It should be the very joy. Because after so many lectures plus tutorial work, we can finally solve this highly optional tutorial problem appeared in your front end course. Can check that. There's a complex analysis front-end tutorial says derive the Virasoro algebra. And we're going to spend a whole lecture on this. Okay, so today we're going to be very goal-oriented, or objectively-oriented. We're just going to find this algebra. And we're like, hey, we did it like twice already. Monday we'll find the algebra. Tuesday we'll find the algebra. Third day we'll still find the algebra. Well, third time is a charm. So, and also, yesterday I already gave the motivation, why would we found it? Remember, our whole goal of the rest of the lecture is trying to ask the question, what kind of conformal field theory we can actually solve exactly and abandon this action idea. And the thing is, this Virasoro algebra, if you find an algebra, you can find the highest weight representation, you build your Hilbert space, and we consider it solved. Well, you also need like finite highest weights and calculate the correlation function, but that's details. The idea is that if we have a symmetry, we find the algebra, we find the representation, and we're almost there. Okay, so how to do this? By now you should really know how to find the algebra because we do it exactly the same way. Our first thing is let's find the generators. Okay, here. Remember, the generator is always something like we have seen so far is the change, functional change in phi. You can write it as some infinitesimal parameters times some generators and acting on the phi. Something like that, maybe sum over. Like that's what we see in first day, that's what we see in today. So this is also our goal today, is to find a functional change in a particular field, and then find the generator. And the way we're going to do this is use this fun fact, says that if we have a symmetry, Then the symmetry should have a conserved current. The conserved current will give us the conserved charge, and then the functional change of the field should be given by the commutator of the charge and the field.
Is this again a primary field that we're talking about, or is that any?
With it, it's any. But we're going to deal with the primary field. We're going to deal with the primary field for some other purposes. But let's just talk about the primary field since that's the only thing we care in CFT. They are either primary fields or children of primary fields. There are no other things. If there are other things, we throw them away. Okay. So this way, I have a very long appendix to prove that this is indeed true, so you can just read. But David claimed you have seen this in classical mechanics. We'll just use that result. But this result tells us, our reaction before is that we need to find the generators, then we find the commutators, which will give us the algebra we're looking for. And this tells us, we really need the commutator already. And the thing is, see, an algebra, look at our algebra. It's always the commutator of two things map to one thing, so it's a binary operator. And so how do we find a binary operator in this case to map a commutator to one object? So this we'll do in two steps. So first, there is a commutator operator product correspondence says that if you have radial ordered, so it says if you have radially ordered operator product, it's somehow related to the commutator. So first we sort of remove the commutator somehow to make it look like an operator product. And the next step is the famous OPE. Operator product expansion says that operator product set expansion is that suppose we have an operator product, but they are very, very close together. But things very close together you've seen from far away. Who knows? Is there one operator there or two operators sitting very close to each other? It's hard to tell. It's like if two of you are walking on the street and I remove my glasses and step back, I probably think it's one person. So that's the intuitive about operator product expansion is if you have two close operator, we can always replace it by a linear combination of one operator, which is very useful because it is a binary operator. It gives you a map from two operator to one operator. So this is also considered an algebra because it does. Well, very good question. OPE can only be understood. So OPE basically says, okay, let me just first say a little bit about this thing. It says you have O1 at Z, and I can pin O2 to zero. And then what I want to make a claim is that this always admit expansion to be some operator. They are all at a zero, and they come with some coefficient, but these are all they are just functions. They are not operators anymore. And you're like, what do you mean close? I thought we have no scale. Well, this is the operator equation, which means all the OPE are secretly understood always in correlation functions with a bunch of dot, dot, dot. These dots, they doesn't do anything. They remain the same dots. But you say within the correlation function, operator product expansion says, regardless what other operators, you can always replace this two by this, then close is defined relatively, says this two are closer than anybody else. Okay? Very good. It's a very good question. And so that's our plan today, is we find a generator, find a commutator, except we have to learn some mathematical tricks on the complex point such that we will achieve the goal mapping the commutator of a two operator to one operator. So our outline today would be the first thing we're going to talk about is that how to relate the radial ordering and the commutators. Actually, it's called the equal time commutator, which of course in our language is the equal radius commutator. But radius is time, we just learned. Okay, so we'll do that. So that will help us, eventually help us achieve the step to get rid of the commutator during our calculation. And the second, we'll try to find our generators. We don't know what's our generators yet. You can probably write something like an L, but what is it? And then we'll do our OPE, which do the next step is that after you replace the commutator by some operator sitting next to each other, and we try to figure out what the how can I replace this two operator by one operator and become an algebra. So then we have all the goals, and we're going to do a slightly long derivation, but then we'll arrive at the jewel on the crown today, which is the established Virasoro algebra. And tomorrow we'll find a representation, build a Hilbert space, and all that sort of things. Okay. So the logic is clear. It's because we want to arrive here, we'll have to do these things. All right, let's first do radial ordering. So let's give a formal definition of the radial ordering. It's really not such a crazy idea, crazy definition. It really says the radial ordering do such things. If Z is outside W, then we put Z in front of W. And if W is outside Z, we put a W in front of Z. And whenever it's in a correlation function, it's automatically radial ordered. Okay, this is really not crazy. It says you put the later time thing in front. This is what we always do anyway. So now we wonder such a fun fact. Let's say this point says it's a mathematical curiosity, but then later we're going to use this relationship at least twice. So let's say the fun fact is now I wonder the following things. So suppose I have a phi 2 W inserted here, and I have some other operator field, whatever you call it, and I wonder if I integrate in a circle around W, what happens? Fun fact. And the mathematicians are very curious about this because this is sort of a monodromy. If you do it in a circle, what happens? Nothing happens, is the usual thing, but often something happens. Okay, monodromy is really the thing that you go to the water park and you have the slides. You could do 360 degree angle, you don't return to yourself. So this mathematically is interesting, and physically, we're going to get some relationship we're going to use again and again because we have all this commutator and we would like to get rid of this square bracket and replace them by operator product. Okay, so let's do this. So the proposed thing to do is suppose there is a contour which is a small circle around W. And we're going to integrate over dz for this operator product, which is supposedly radially ordered. Okay, I'll carry this R one more time, but at some point I'll just not write them anymore because nobody writes it. It's always understood it's radial ordered or time ordered. Okay, so this is good. So how do we propose to do this contour integral? Well, the thing is, because they are radially ordered, but if you look at this contour, let me draw this underlying circle, which doesn't look very circular. Okay, bear with me. That's a circle with radius W absolute. So the proposed solution of doing this is we can split the contours. Says I can do this guy. First, and then we can do this guy next. So this is my C1, this is my C2. And then you can see that as long as I get sufficiently close to each other, this part, if I have no poles, they'll just disappear. And what we left is indeed the contour we're interested.
I think the direction of contour is.
Yeah. So I'm going to write it as C2. So we're going to do a contour on C2 minus a contour in C1. Yep. Good. So C2 minus C1 is this, let's call it a C. Okay. And now we're happy because if we look at a C2, the Z is always outside the W. So we know exactly how to order them. We put a Z in front. And for the inside contour, we're also happy because now Z is always smaller than W. So we put W in front. Okay. And now we make the such claim. The claim is, remember, Nicholas asked this beautiful question. Says, what do we mean by close? Exactly. I'm trying to make an operator claim. So this is an operator equation. I'm trying to claim the radial order of this operator equals something. So I'd better be still in the correlation function sense. I could have inserted many, many operators there, and it's supposed to hold for all the operators I could possibly insert. So this is not going to work if some operators get squeezed in between these two operators I'm interested. So in order to for that not happen, we're actually going to take the limit. The limit we're taking is we make epsilon goes to 0. So first we want to make them really, really close. Then we want the C2 and minus 1 actually lie on top of each other. So we make this two con. So first we make this small circle really teeny, and then we make this green and the blue contour to be on top of each other. If we take this limit, then there's no other operator can screw us up. They will be always far away and the radial ordered some other way. So there's nothing jumping between. So with that limit in mind, this really is a single contour, which is the contour that the Z is equals to W. So we're really integrating along the orange contour, which is the limit contour. And then we can happily write them together. As promised, it gives us the commutator. Because now they said this is the same contour. So this is what we want to. The first thing we arrive at is a radial ordered operator product is related to an equal time commutator in precisely this way, by the argument of complex contour deformation. Okay. So this is a fun fact that we just needed to do other things. So that's step one. We established when we see a commutator, we're allowed to replace them by a product if you carefully keep track where the contour are. So if the contour along the equal time, which is the equal radius, then you have the equal time commutator. This can always be understood as the radial ordering of these two operator, but now the contour will be around one of the operators. Okay, we're going to use this at least twice, so we're going to see it. So generators. How do we discover generators? As what do we see? What I claim 30 phi is given by this Q phi commutator thing. Okay, any questions before we move on? What we did is we have a contour, we deformed it into two contours, then demand those two contours to be one contour, taking all sorts of epsilon goes to zero limit. Okay, so consider this as a fun fact we're going to use later. Actually, the later means now, because we already have this. Okay, so let me try to roughly argue what this Q is. So remember, we have some current associated with your Killing vectors, and charge is nothing but a current there's component integrated over space. And in this, normally we have the argument that says you can send the space to infinity, then the charge will be conserved. This time I have an even better argument with our space doesn't have a boundary. Remember there is this divergence theorem that you can change the volume integral to be a surface integral, then you push the surface to infinity, you say, okay, let's say nothing else. There's nothing's out there if you go surface and far. But this argument goes way better on a cylinder. Your volume is this circle that doesn't have boundary. So your charge is guaranteed to be conserved. Okay, now I'm gonna just motivate this and then write down what is Q. Q, it's not that crazy. It says it's T. Okay, I'll put the non-operator first. It's this thing, plus the dot, 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 the anti-holomorphic part. Okay? It's just this. Okay, so now let's calculate what's the functional change of delta phi. It is the commutator, the equal time commutator. So let's pull out my integral here, and then I have an epsilon, the infinitesimal change. Then we got a Tz and phi w, and then we integrate the contour when they are equal time. Okay. So.
I'm sorry, the epsilon is now.
That is our conformal Killing vector. I'm so sorry. Let me make this,
this is a different epsilon, I'm sure, but I mean the epsilon up there, why doesn't it come with an, is that the zero component, or what is that? I mean,
that's the whole thing. That's the whole tower of it.
Oh, yeah, but I mean epsilon.
So this?
But it's a two-dimensional vector still, right? Because we're a two-dimensional setup, so.
Yeah, you have epsilon z and epsilon bar z bar.
Yeah. Oh, right.
And this is the holomorphic part.
Yeah, thanks.
So your concern is it's dropped into this dot, dot, dot thing. Okay, so let's do this. But this we know how to do. This, according to the thing we just write down, I can consider this as some other contour, which is centered around this W. Then if we do that, I can happily just remove the commutator. Huh. It's a very useful technique. You say you change where your contour is, then commutator disappear. Okay. At this point, I'm going to expand our epsilon z again. Oh, this is going to be interesting. Says that so this is understood to integrate somewhere around W. And then remember the expansion is an times z n plus 1. Now and then there is this phi w, it doesn't do anything. It's not even depending on z. And now I think, see if I can also expand tz such that it pick out a term that is, it will make the whole thing have a simple pole. Then I can do this integral according to Cauchy's theorem. This will give me an ln acting on phi. So this proposal tells us we should Lorentz expand our TZ to be sum of n ln times z to the n minus n minus 2, and we can call these generators by the same argument we made again and again, which is the functional change of delta phi can be defined to be some parameters times the generator acting on phi. Okay, so this motivates us how to find these generators. It should be the Lorentz expansion of TZ. And because we're doing complex analysis, we can also write each individual mode as a contour integral of our TZ, right? It's the same argument that it will pick up the simple pole thing. So we found our generator. This is our generator. You can, it's individual Lorentz mode of the energy momentum tensor, and it can be written as a contour integral of Tz times some z to blah blah to cancel out the pole, to pick up the particular mode.
So what exactly happened? Sorry, I mean, you said the epsilon, you're going to expand the epsilon, the terminal series?
This is our expansion of epsilon.
Okay, and then
I say if it happened, I can also expand Tz. Yeah, it's the individual summation, but you know that when we do the contour integral, only the simple pole will contribute. So there's going to be a delta somewhere, and I cancel it out. And the only mode you're going to pick up is this guy. Right?
Yeah.
Very good. Find our generators. Item 2 done, and we're a little bit over half an hour, so that's good. Third thing, OPE. Yep.
Those are defined to be
this contour integral. This is just a Lorentz expansion.
Yeah, okay, so
and then if you plug this expansion in and multiply by this again, this pole will pick out. This is just the solution of this.
L has nothing to do with in the first
one. Well. Well, I wouldn't say have nothing to do, because you will find the algebra somehow look like this.
Yeah, okay.
But this is indeed our generator of our conformal symmetry.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
Because we did the same thing. We have a conformal symmetry. We try to figure out how delta phi changes. And we always find our generators exactly the same way. It's just this delta phi is governed by some quantum operator thing. And that delta phi change is just governed by some Taylor expansion. Okay, but you will find it curiously, you know, it's related, because after all, what we're doing is trying to promote that classical algebra into a quantum version. So they should be related. So somehow. But okay, we find our generators. I'm happy. The next thing to do would be OPE. Ah, I already wrote it here. OPE has this cute argument that says if operators are close in the sense there are other operators far away, then we can replace the product of two operators by some linear combination of one operator. And that's the idea of OPE. And you will have the glorious details, or maybe gory details, tomorrow in the tutorial. We will actually get our hands dirty on them, some scalar field action, which is very, very important, because that is the string theory, bosonic string-free string theory action. So it's not a random action. And yes, we'll have more detail how to do OPE when we have a specific theory. We write down everything, and we use weak contraction stuff. But today, we're going to actually try to do OPE without knowing the action again, because we can. We're in conformal field theory. So the thing is, like, if I want to do an OPE, what is the first thing I should do? Well, we don't have many players in town. We have the VIP primary field. We have the energy moment tensor. So the first natural question to ask is, what happens if I put phi and the t close together? What do I get? Well, there's not many questions we can ask if we have, like, two fields. OK, so this is the natural question we ask. Is I put a phi Maybe, let me see. Okay, it doesn't matter. It's really ordered. So, okay, and then you wonder. So they always use this thing to denote OPE. It says that for OPE, we only care about the singular term, because if you get so close, all the positive top power, you can just take it to be zero. It all goes to zero somehow. Then the question to ask is, what happens to this? Okay, the way to do it is to observe. Well, at least we know where the OPE happens. It happens here. So if we can somehow compare this with some guy we're done, what do we compare with? Fun fact we learned yesterday is that we do know how primary field transform. It transform like this. That's the definition of the primary field. So, enlightened by that, let me write it again, except I'll write the infinitesimal version because there's an epsilon there to be compared. So I can write as, basically the only thing I'm doing is copy that formula over, but change fz to be z plus epsilon z. And the next thing to do is some people's favorite, some people's least favorite is doing linear expansion. So this, we get 1 plus partial epsilon and the h drop off. And then this is the Taylor expansion plus epsilon partial phi. Okay, okay. So now, of course, the functional change is just get rid of the one term. What we get is h partial epsilon. Let me just use some different variable this time and call it w to be matched later. And this is the other term. Nothing crazy happens. I say, since primary field is defined, B field evolve like change like that, I can definitely figure out what's the infinitesimal version. The infinitesimal version is like this. Then I do the linear expansion, throw away everything, goes beyond the epsilon linear order, and this is what I have left. Nothing crazy. And I just need to match this with that guy. And the way to do this is, again, using our Cauchy's formula. Says that Cauchy's formula tells me that I can always replace epsilon omega by the integral of z minus omega epsilon z. The partial, the other thing can just tag along for the right. But this is what Cauchy tells me. This thing is the simple pole. And the other guy is h partial epsilon. And for phi omega, and this Cush says if you have a derivative, that means you have a double pole. Okay. Ignore these phi things. They are just tagging along. The only thing I did is replace partial epsilon by epsilon divided by z squared integrate over. Okay? So this is just what the counter integral tells me. Which means putting this together, it's integral of dz. Oh, I lost my what I'm integrating over. Okay, this put together gives me epsilon z partial phi over z minus w. I can take the epsilon out now, and it gives me h phi over z minus w squared. I'm just collecting the two terms together. And now I can compare. I compare this guy to this guy. Right? I can just look and read things off. It tells me, without knowing anything about the theory, as euro, which is that confident, that we know the OPE expansion must be given by the thing in that bracket. Well, at least the singular term, there is this regular term which we throw away. The OPE only cares about the singular term, so whatever we cannot figure out by contour integral, we just don't want it anyway. Okay, so this is our. Well, you can't really figure out any regular part by doing contour integral. Contour integral can only tells you about the post, right? So the reason that we only care about the singular part is we claim they are very, very close. So whatever you have left compared to these terms is going to be like to the positive, some positive power, it's going to be small if you take them to be close. The other way of saying is, you remember you talk about some normal ordering, is some time ordering, subtract some correlation function, and normal order the thing. So this dot, 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 which we don't care, is the normal ordered thing that is always finite. Okay. But look how cute it is. Still, we know nothing about the theory. And we managed to find this very important OPE. This OPE is very, very important because we can take this as the alternative definition of the primary field. So a primary field is precisely defined by, if we calculate the operator product expansion of the primary field with the energy momentum tensor, it will give only the single pole and the double pole. And even better, the double pole comes with the coefficient telling us what's the conformal weight. And that's the other information we need.
We calculate the delta of delta.
Yeah.
Then write down the OPE, but like, how did you conclude? Like, how did you deduce that that is OPE?
So the idea is we calculate the delta phi two ways, right? First, we calculate by using the commutator, which gives you this line, and then we say, but in the particular case of primary field, I know exactly how phi change because that's the definition. So we basically what I say is we calculate the delta phi two ways. Well, if you calculate one thing two ways, most time we hope they agree. And if you demand they agree, the only way they can agree is this operator product expansion is given by this guy. Okay. So let's move on since I have 60 minutes. Okay. So this is our OPE, and this is also known as the alternative definition of the primary field. This is actually how you figure out a field is primary field. It's not how you, like how you transform. How do I know how you transform? What you do know is if you write down an action, you can find the energy momentum tensor, you can put a field together, you can fuse them together, and using the contraction theorem, find out what's your OPE, then you look at the poles. And if you only have a single pole and a double pole, that means you are primary field, and you can read off the conformal weight as well. Neat. And we're going to do that exactly tomorrow in the tutorial for free scalars. All right. So there's lots of things has been skipped because it's really, really an awesome exercise if you just take the free scalar and take your energy momentum sensor and you do your little weak contraction thing and look at how the OPE look like. So I'm not going to do it. That's actually not a dirty calculation, that it's just tedious and I won't hide it in the carpet. This is a very useful exercise, so we're going to do it in the tutorial together. But the next thing, what do we want to do? Still, I have two things. I have a primary field, I have some energy momentum tensor. If you wonder, what can we do without knowing any action? Because I don't know any action. The next thing to do is, huh, what if I put the two energy momentum tensor together, right? So now we're just going to do some guessing. So first, I'll just assume the simple pole term still exists. And the double pole term is probably also exists with some question mark. Well, this guy should come with the argument.
Are you assuming T is a primary field there?
Very good question. This time, this okay, let me not write the dots because I claim dots are not important. So let me underscore this. This is something important. And then there's something thrown away. Very good question. Is T a primary field? Well, we can't assume it is. And since that anything can happen, would happen, so it's probably not. So let's first figure out the question mark and then figure out the underscore. The argument for the question mark, there were actually two arguments. So the first argument is, well, we know that this thing, if I integrate over space, it will give me energy. So by that argument alone, the engineered naive scaling dimension should be 2. You integrate over space, you get energy, you integrate it over space again, it gives you some dimensionless thing. So this should give you scaling dimension 2. On the other hand, although I didn't write it, but I write it here, it is supposed to be a 2 indexed tensor. That means it is supposed to be spin 2. So if you have an object that has scaling dimension 2 and spin 2, and hopefully remember that at some point we wrote down something like L0 plus L0 bar give you the scaling dimension. And then the subtraction gave you the spin. And if they are both 2, it means that T needs to, this thing has to have a conformal with 2, 0. So this thing should really just be 2. So that's argument 1. But then you have to remember a lot of things like what's this L0 mode, and they gave you scaling and the rotation and stuff. But let's use something that we learned yesterday, not the little thing we learned, you know, yesterday. Okay, let's make an argument that is actually on board that can make sure that you, hopefully you agree this number really should be 2. By realizing, let's look at this term. This term says, the phi is the same. So this says T goes something like this. But supposedly, if I claim T is some, I claim what's in front of this is a correlation function of 2 field operator. And then if this thing goes like this, according to what we learned yesterday, that the 2-point correlation function is extremely constrained. It says that, okay, this should be some other field. I'm really running out of notation. I'll draw them the field of smiling face. So some other field, like I claim, if I just look at this 2 term, the singular behavior of T should behave like some 2-point correlation function of the smiling face. And by the factor, this is 2. And what we learned before, the only thing that would happen is this is 1, 0 and 1, 0. Because the 2-point function demands they have to have the same conformal weight, and this is twice as much. So now we're making a connection says, no matter, regardless what's this field, what's this phi, because it's the same, T must be very similar to some correlation function of 2 smiling face field, each have conformal weight 1, 0. And now this should be easy enough to persuade you to believe that the T should have conformal weight 2, 0. Okay, so that's the question mark. Now there is an underscore. Well, since data has conformal weight 2, 0, so the worst ever divergence you will ever get is 2^4. And then there is some constants coming up there. It's just convention to write it as C over 2. And you were like, hey, I'm missing a cubic term. And the cube, like we're doing a bosonic thing. That means if I write this, this is really equals to this because the radial ordering is understood. So this should be equals to this. And that constraint will kill the cubic term. So this can't be exist because that doesn't satisfy this requirement. You're like, hey, you have a linear, like you have a simple pole term there. But this term will actually be saved because this guy has arguments. If you switch this to, if you change W and Z, and there's going to be some Taylor expansion, split out a term, cancel out whatever that term you don't want, such that this is satisfied. If you want to figure out, you can look at Tang's notes. Tang's notes prove this term, although it's to the one power, it's allowed, but to the third top power, it doesn't have anything that can Taylor expand to save us. So this is a proposed TTOP, and it's actually very general. And you can read any sort of string theory or Tang's book. They can do all sorts of ghosts or whatever, all sorts of field and theory, and then they just calculate the OP. It always looks like this. The first two terms is fixed. The only thing that's different is this constant, which is known as the central charge. And this is very important. This is the third thing I want you to take away from the third class. This is important in some senses. For example, we're studying with one scalar field. And if in string theory you wonder, what if I study many of them? Then this central charge, okay, tomorrow you will find the C is one for one scalar field. And you can convince yourself if you have, you know, 26 of them, then you have this 26 of them. So somehow the TTOPE contentious term secretly tells us how many degrees of freedom we have. So that's one way to say why central charge is important. And then the other way, you can also say from if we're going between a cylinder and a plane, and you can figure out how T transform during that process. If you demand that the energy, that if you do, it does integrate it over the space, find the Hamiltonian, demand that it's zero on the plane, you will find that it's non-zero on the cylinder, which corresponding to your Casimir energy, which is described by this thing. And then this thing also tell you about a well anomaly. I claim that the T is traceless, but that's lying, because in the quantum theory, some quantum effect will develop precisely encoded in the C, such that you will have anomaly. And what the string theory want is cancel the anomaly by using 26 scalar field against some ghost, which has minus 26. And the last argument for this thing being important is remember that there's a motivation about CFT is the CFT is the Joule in the space of QFT, then you can just flow them. And there is actually a theorem called the C theorem says, if I flow this thing, is this from UV to IR has CFT, and then we flow between them, you can find a C function to describe this flow, which exactly equals to the C number at the fixed point where the CFT. This thing is really, really, really important. Then tomorrow we're going to say that with H and C on the HC plane, one conformal weight, one C on this plane, what the unitarity tell us is that you can only have very discretized sort of conformal theory, which come back to our original comment is what theories. The last lecture will answer the question we asked in the first class is what a series. But in the last 5 minutes, let's gloriously try to calculate the Virasoro algebra. So now I know exactly what I'm doing. I have my two generators, I'm doing my commutator. And the generators, let me remind you, is the Laurent mode of the energy moment tensor. And if we are on the complex plane, we're very lucky because we can use all these counter integrals. So this. To compare with my notes if I lost track of things. Now I just plug in the definition of the general return, nothing fancy happens. And the next thing I'm going to do is, supposedly I carefully deform one of my contours. Then I can replace this by the radial ordering. That's our first fun fact. If we change our contour nicely, then the commutator drop off, we have the equal ordering operator product. Fun fact number two, we already guessed what's our product going to be. It's going to be the operator product expansion. So I'm going to copy over my OPE for TT with this proposed central charge term. Okay, so now I just need to do the integrals. Okay. Not terrible integral because we have the Cauchy formula. So the proposed, so what do I do? So this thing, I don't have to do anything because it's a simple pole. I just copy over and then replace Z by omega by W's. So that's the first term. And this guy, I need to work slightly harder because it's a double pole. I need to do the derivative of that guy and then replace it by W. And this whatever on top is taking a lot. And then there's that term, which means I have to do triple derivative. Give me all sorts of things. And I have minus two, and then I pick up a three factorial factor. Okay.
Sorry.
Yep.
What are we doing for the third line?
The third line, we're just doing performing this counter integral using Cauchy's theorem. You have a single pole, you just read off what's above. You have a double pole, you do a derivative. If you have a quadruple pole, you do three derivatives. It's exactly using that formula, just perform the counter integral. Okay. And we're going to do it again. Okay, so the first term, there is a partial. I want to move the partial onto the W terms. So it will pick up a minus sign called the integral by parts thing. And then this thing, so if I do that, I have TW, W to the N plus 2, W to the N plus W, M plus 1. So the only thing I'm doing in this line is to integrate by parts, move the partial onto the W's. And then the next term we do is we do nothing. We leave it alone. So this term become 2 WN plus 1 plus M. And this thing we can do. This is C over 12. And this thing only works. So there's only W dependence. So I can take off all this thing. And it says this is only going to work if I collect the exponent of W and it equals to minus 1. If it's a simple pole, I can integrate it. Otherwise, you get 0. Okay. So this term is, by definition, related to L. Right? Because L is Tz times z to the n plus 1. So that one is actually L n plus m with some coefficients. And the next guy, oh, minus, is 2. Oh, sorry, I lost something. There's m plus 1 here. And that is also m plus n. And the last thing is just constant. Last thing doesn't change. It's still this guy. Except if you look at this, this is really saying that n plus m is 0. So if that happens, you get this the term. And if it doesn't happen, then you get, Okay, I lost a minus sign somewhere. The answer is supposed to n minus m, or n plus m, the same as that, and the plus this central charge term. So this is our established Virasoro algebra. Okay, let me see why I lost a minus sign. Ah, because this guy is supposed to be W, the other guy is supposed to be Z. Sorry. Yeah, so this is supposed to be W, this is supposed to be Z. So yeah, this formula, you just switch all the W's and Z's, and then you will get this sign correctly. Okay. But let me stop here. This is the Virasoro algebra. We have this. It's basically that, plus this term controlled by central charge, which actually can restudy, like Blumhardt did it entirely opposite way. It proposed, says, we have this algebra, let's just propose the quantum correction is a central extension of this Lie algebra. How can we make this Lie algebra even bigger? The only way you can make it bigger is to involve a constant. So he first proposed this is the extension, and then go back to show going backwards to do whatever we're doing. But this is it, the very sorrow, very joy algebra. I'll see you tomorrow.